Next item on the agenda is Sean P. Green, Oyster Planting Ground Applications 2014-245. Mr. Stagg, good morning.
So this is a Oyster Planting Ground application. Sean P. Green received in 2014. This is another one of our older applications. We're trying to get caught up in the backlog, and it is protested by a number of residents that live along mostly Haywood Creek. The application in slight part of the southwest branch of Southern River and Haywood Creek. So this is area map. The application is located in this area. Severn River, Northwest Branch, and the Southwest Branch, York River, the bridge to the south, basically this area right here. A little closer view. Again, the application starts in this area. Goes up the creek. This is a separate piece here. This area has been leased in the past, not every bit of it, but portions of it. This is with aerial photography, so you can see the nature of the land use around it. There are residential properties in the upper reaches of the application. This is primarily uninhabited area here, and then there are residences here, but there are some leases already along the shore in this location. These are two riparian applications that we received after the Green application. In addition, this application also was received after this part of the protest. Some of the landowners did apply for riparians. We do take precedence over pending applications, and we have surveyed these. The actual survey you'll see will exclude the area of this riparian, and we didn't go into this code with the actual survey. So we did receive the application in 2014. Again, we did receive some subsequent riparian applications and protests. A portion of the application of Green is actually within areas that are currently classified as restricted for the direct market of shellfish harvest. That portion of the application was not included in the survey. This application does predate our policy to not accept applications in those areas. Mr. Green was informed of that and was offered the option to withdraw his application, although most of it was not in restricted area. He opted to continue to proceed. And again, when we surveyed the application, you can see this is the restricted area. It's kind of hard to see in this photo on the screen, although I can see it good on the computer. His application actually came a little bit further upstream, and we did not include that in the actual survey. So what we're looking at is basically to the north and east of that red area up near the mouth of Haywood Creek. The use of cages, floats, and nets for shellfish propagation has resulted in an increased public awareness of leasing of bottomlands and highlighted the necessity for a more comprehensive review of these application requests. Such requests in populated areas raise new issues regarding public trust lands to include user conflicts, property values, aesthetics, navigation impacts, and suitable bottom types. Stewardship of public trust lands, while weighing the public and private benefits versus the detriments, requires a multifaceted review for shellfish lease application requests. Beginning in early 2015, we began to receive objections to this application from property owners in the area. Those objections include concerns about impacts to navigation, the close proximity of the lease application to private piers, and potential wildlife disturbance. In addition to the five protests received, one of the protestants provided a petition letter with 13 additional names of those in opposition to the lease request. There's a list of the protestants in your packet with that letter, with the additional names and the actual letters of protest and staff's response. The primary concern of most of the letters was impacts to navigation. The applicant did complete our use plan questionnaire, which is mandatory that it be completed for us to proceed with the application. but it's not a mandatory requirement that they do or don't do what they put on the application. So what we ask is, are you going to use it for traditional on-bottom aquaculture, yes or no, or are you going to use it, in addition, are you going to use it for some type of cage aquaculture, which by regulation we do allow cages up to 12 inches above the substrate on a lease once it's obtained. Mr. Green checked yes on the traditional methods and no to cage aquaculture. I have spoken to Mr. Green, and he continues to say that he really plans to use this for harvest, shelling, and seeding in a traditional method, and I'm assuming probably dredge it with a small dredge. We did, when we surveyed the application, attempt to address as much as possible the concerns of the residents in the area and their peers, and tried to set corners in a way that they would not interfere with access to their peers. While we did do this, a number of individuals continued to object to the area as currently surveyed, so that's why we're here today. So this is a much closer view of the actual surveyed area. Again, starting near the mouth of the creek and running along pretty close to the shoreline here. There are no piers located in this area. There are no houses located in this area either. This area was where one of those riparians were, so that's been cut out. So these corners actually, some of these corners match the riparian corners. And again, we stay far enough offshore on this side of the cove to accommodate another riparian in this location. There were some objections up the creek as well. This is where the polluted line is, so we stopped the survey here. There was a riparian application here that's beyond the scope. Riparians can be surveyed in restricted areas because the code says if you own the frontage, you get a riparian, basically. The regular leases, we have the option to lease them or not lease them. Again, there are a couple piers here. We attempted to set the corners in a way we thought would not restrict access to the pier. I'm sure if the protestants are here that live in those areas, they may have a different opinion and certainly tell us today. We are still willing to modify this per commission action that might alleviate their concerns in some way. We do evaluate each protested application on a case-by-case basis, considering all the comments received concerning the area being requested. In this case, while the applicant would have the right to place cages upon the lease, if granted, he has indicated he does not intend to deploy such gear, but he would have the right to do so in the future if he changed his mind. Additionally, the placement of any such gear on the bottom must comply with our current regulations, which do have a provision related to impacts to navigation. The use of the requested area for traditional on-bottom planting and cultivation would not appear to have much of any impact on navigation within the area requested. Most of the lease corners are not in the main navigation area of the creek, and we did attempt again to address any conflicts with private use piers to the greatest extent possible. This is the final survey plat that was submitted just yesterday by my surveyor who had done the work some time ago. But this matches that red area that you just saw. And this is the remaining area of the 114 downstream of the polluted area that we believe could be leased subject to any commission modification at this hearing. So in conclusion, while staff understands the concerns about potential impacts to navigation and access to private piers, the requested area has been modified in an attempt to address those issues to the greatest extent possible. And the applicant has indicated that he plans to use the lease for traditional on-bottom shellfish cultivation methods in the area requested. Additionally, use of this area for traditional bottom cultivation should have a negligible impact upon wildlife in the area, and may actually provide better water quality within the water body due to more oysters. Staff does recommend approval of this modified area of 90.84 acres. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Our surveyor, commission surveyor that did the work, is here. If we have any technical questions, he may be able to answer those better than me as to the location of the corners and proximity to the piers. I'm not sure if Mr. Green is here. He indicated he might not be. although he said if he wasn't, he would submit a letter. So apparently he's here. And I'm pretty sure some of the opposition is here.
Okay.
Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ben. Any questions of Mr. Stagg? Mr. France.
Do you know if Mr. Green has any other leases?
I do not.
Okay.
He can answer.
Yeah, he'll be. Any further questions? Mr. Tankard, thank you.
Say, in fact, Mr. Green decides to go with cages. By looking at this, it would seem like this would be a difficult area for that. Is that your estimation as well, Mr. Stagg?
As you may recall, a couple months ago, we brought you an application in that we said the bottom was not suitable except one small area of hard bottom. We did not do that kind of extensive probing of this particular creek. My guess is, my surveyor's here, he can probably tell you when he stuck the stakes the nature of the bottom. I think there are locations within this area more than likely that would support cage aquaculture in the shallower areas. The rest of it probably better suited to traditional use.
Okay. But with follow-up question.
Yes, sir, Mr. Tanker.
With regard to navigation, which I see in the comments.
I doubt seriously anyone would attempt to put cages in the deeper area of this just because of the nature of trying to work them in deeper water.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's not a real deep creek. Some of the issues with the residents is, I mean, some of the letters said they think just traditional shelling of the bottom will cause navigation problems.
I saw.
But we have leases like this in almost every creek and river in the Commonwealth at these similar depths and have for decades and decades. And
right.
We're not aware of any major navigation issues that's created.
Mr. Tankard.
And you did testify that this area had been leased before in different parcels. Thank you.
Further questions? Ben, I don't recall. The applicant has indicated he's going to use on bottom traditional shell and planting, whatever, and not cages. If he agrees to that, can we put that in there as a condition of the lease?
Well, I'll defer to your legal counsel, but the position in the past has been because leasing is controlled by the Code of Virginia, it's not a permit or a license that we can't put any conditions on it. We have a regulation that allows for cages on a lease. And that's the specific regulation language that was adopted by the commission. So that in and of itself is sort of a condition, but it's by regulation. We have never put any kind of condition on a lease in the past, and I'll defer to Kelsey.
You ready for that question? Bottom line is, I'm not going to put you on a spot to come up with an answer to that if you don't really know the answer. I mean, that's a difficult question that may need research, but anyway,
yeah,
if you want to take a shot at it, go ahead.
I think it probably would require a bit more research, but putting a condition in the lease that contradicts a direct allowance in the regulations, my first impression without digging into it too deep is that might be a little problematic.
Can't you dig a little deeper and say it's not problematic?
No. Anything for you.
Okay. Well, I really honestly want to take a shot at it because I think if that were the case and the individual was going to do that, that might tend to have a little different impact as far as my impression is concerned. So you never know. Further questions? Any follow-up? Oh, thank you, Heather. Ms. Lusk?
Yes. I just wanted to clarify, though, and I think you mentioned it, that should the applicant ever decide to put cage aquaculture in any part of the lease, if it was an impediment to navigation, the commission has the authority to address that immediately and
that's correct. There
suggest is a, removal there is a, or relocation, should that be necessary.
There is a condition within the regulation that says that any cage aquaculture up to 12 inches cannot create more than a minimal impact, adverse impact on navigation. If we got a complaint, we or law enforcement, my department or law enforcement, would check that out. And it's up to the commission to decide whether they believe it is more than an adverse
okay.
impact. If it is, we do require, and we have done this on other leases. If we concur, then we require the leaseholder to either remove the cages or move them into a location where we don't think we're creating that kind of impact.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you,
Ms. Lusk. Appreciate that follow-up. Further questions, Mr. Stagg? Thank you, Ben. Is the applicant present or represented? Come forward, please, sir. Would you raise your right hand? You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. State your name for the record, please. Okay. You want to tell us a little bit about your application?
Yes, sir. You have to bear with me. I'm not real big on public speaking.
We don't bite, I promise you.
The application clearly states on there, in my ugly handwriting, that it's conventional methods. It's what I intend to do. There's only a few hard bottom places in this at all where you could ever even consider doing cages.
Okay.
That would be if I'm allowed to approach a screen.
No, what you could do, help the admin, you have to stay there because we have to get it on the record. So if you can use the mouse pointer, that would be great.
Okay, all right. The sand bar this way, against the edge, only against the edge. It does not go real far out into the where navigable waters are. But outside of that, some of the letters said something about property value, decreasing the homeowner's property value. Never even heard of an orchard ground decreasing someone's property value. This, as it was mentioned, some of this has been private. I don't have any other leases. This is it. This was always held by a part of my family. Well, it didn't have to be the Green last name, but a part of the family have held parts of this since forever that I can remember. All right. I've already agreed to cut where it came to the condemn line. When Mr. Stagg placed a phone call to me and let me know, I agreed. Hey, let's just cut it off. I don't want to cause no trouble. I don't want to cause any extra work. Hey, because that part was not what I intended on working. I just put in for the whole piece if I had to modify it. Well, I've already modified it once. I felt that was good. Other grounds have been awarded after the fact. I understand they're riparian. Some of the same protests saying I shouldn't get the ground, put in for ground and got awarded after the fact. Now, two of these places, here, this is the old Winter's place and this is Pollard's. Pollard's the one put in for the ground. They don't have a problem. They don't have a protest about this. My presentations.
You're doing fine.
I don't really know what to say other than I've modified it to this. I'd like to get it. The cage part, where your writing is, all of this is soft bottom. It's not even an option for cages. It's just not a possibility. I was raised on this. We have land right by this. I was raised on this. I've walked every inch of this marsh. I know what I'm talking about. We can do a survey showing about the bottom hardness, but I've walked it. I can tell you. I really don't know what to say other than that.
Let's see what the commission has as far as questions. Members? Mr. France?
Yes, so the revised version, the 90, I think it's the 90.9 some acres, you are in agreement with that?
Yes, I was in total agreement.
Okay.
Ms. Lusk?
And you have personally worked portions of this ground in the past?
Well, I worked this myself. My father, my great-grandfather, my great-grandfather at one time owned this. Or had the lease rights out of the Willow Charming. He had this years upon years ago. Then it went to a different family member. And after they let it go, I put in for this. That's how I became aware.
Got it.
Mr. Tankard.
And so tell us again what exactly you're planning on doing. Is this going to be spat on shell? You're going to shell the bottom?
Conventional planting is my full intention. And that's what I put on the application. As far as the cages, it's really not an option except in a few little places off to this. And this requires more permits and more trouble to go through. I was more worried about the conventional plan.
Okay.
To be honest with you, this whole process started. I wanted to get this and let my father work it. Well, it was a drawn-out process. He's currently since passed, so that's not an option. But I still want the ground after the fact.
Questions? Who owns all the upland? I can't see from that map Is that developed through that area, or is that developable property through there, or not? It's not?
All of this. This is what
all marsh. I can't.
This is Salt Pond Cove right here. All right, the glare is killing me as well. But all of this is just straight marsh.
Okay.
All of this.
Okay. It looked like it. I just couldn't tell from that map. Anyway. Further questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Green. Anyone else in support of this project? Morning, sir. Just raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Kenneth Hogg.
Okay, Mr. Hogg.
I'm a friend of the family, a friend of Sean. I've been knowing that family for a long time. I can tell that whole area has been held in Greenland for a long time. I know over 50 years. I'm 75 years old, and Thornton's Creek, we call it, we go up through there. It's always been like Sean, since I was a kid, I was in and out of that creek. But it's always been, what I understand, has been there. Oyster Ground, his great-grandfather, Mr. Green, had most all of it at one time, Willie Green. And his father worked it. But I see no problem. What I know of Oyster Ground is, if he gets it today, it's going to be the same thing as it was tomorrow, other than he's going to have it staked off as he is, you know, renting up. But because it doesn't, the public, it doesn't bother the public from going in and out of it. It doesn't hurt anything. The only thing, he's got the rights to harvest and plant the oysters on it. And I think Mr. Green would like to have it, so it can make him a better livelihood, so he can make him a dollar or two or whatever. And the way he's planning on doing of it is back to the old way things were doing. And I think that's the best way we can get for conservation today. And the oysters are picking up now of things, and the better you can get our creeks and get them cleaned up again, the better it is. I don't see any. I wouldn't have any opposition to it if I lived on a creek. But I'm more or less, and all of his family members that I'm speaking for them too, that do have property on that creek. Yeah, but you know, everybody's got concerns about when they see something happen in front of the house. Well, I'm like this here. You see a boat going in there every day, it will be the same thing. It's not going to be any construction or anything out there that would mess your livelihood up or mess your home up. Or not. I can't see where it would do anything to knock your property value down. If it was some construction or building something there, I could see that, but not this here. But my personal feeling is this would be a good deal. And like I say, we're getting back to the old way of doing things. You talk about cages. Who knows what the future brings? But right now, I don't think it will ever happen. But the way Sean looks at it, you people up here, you're with it all the time. It might come to one of these days, if you're gonna have oysters, you'll be forced to have them in cages. So I don't know. I can't speak to that, because you know how things change. Laws change all the time. But like you know better than I do, what restrictions that would put on anyone for that to be oyster ground, it wouldn't stop any boats. It wouldn't stop us from doing anything on the creek. And but I think that's the way it's going to be. And like I said, I speak for Brother Green, and I like for it to be that way. And I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Hogg?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else in support of this project? Anyone here in opposition to the project? Okay, let's see. Okay, is everybody going to speak, or do y'all have a spokesperson, or how do you want to do this? You do? All right, so those that are going to speak, please come forward. Looks like you've got a pretty good organization going through. He's not sure he wants to come. All right, this will work well. Would you stand up if you're going to testify, please? Raise your right hands. Solemnly swear the testimony that you give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. Who's first, sir? Y'all can have a seat right up here to make it a lot easier.
Well, I'm
sorry. Your name, sir?
My name is Kevin Farmer.
Thank you, Mr. Farmer.
I live on the creek here. A lot of concerns, and we've talked about them, are navigation. And that becomes to the fact that the permit does not specify what way you're going to harvest. Once that person has the right, and I don't begrudge the right to fish, because it's pretty much the heritage of this area. But what we're concerned with is the amount of silt that started to fill this creek in the last few years. It is a rapid rise. Okay, when you start dredging traditionally down on here, and the tide's coming in, it's going to drive a lot more silt back farther up the creek where a majority of the navigation is coming from. If you look beyond the rights here on the map, most of the boats are coming from outside of the current proposed lease. Another thing is, I live within the lease right here, and you can see where they've kind of run around my... This is the first year since Isabel that I actually have seagrass that goes from my pier all the way to the next inlet. The first year I have a continuous line, and it's the first year that I have a continuous line of oysters. The only place oysters grow in this creek are along the 2-foot edge of the creek, because it is 4 foot of mud. It's not a very good oyster in body. You don't start hitting high ground, like Mr. Green said, until you get up closer to where Thornton's and Haywood split off. It's not very good oyster in ground. And for that fact, that's what I'm concerned about, is we're going to do this. If he starts dredging a lot, the shelf of mud right there is going to shift. A lot of these agricultural fields drain, and for a long time after Isabel, there was no seagrass there, and it just started. It's been a bad runoff area. And it's just now starting to show signs of recovery, and you start pulling that mud away, it's just going to shift that down, and it's going to start all over again. And that's one of my biggest concerns. I have lost 2.5 feet of shoreline since Isabel, due to erosion. And I've been really trying to promote this grass and the small bit of oysters that are going along the edge there for erosion control. And it's just from the pier going east, it is showing great recovery. Going west towards the contamination zone, not so much. It's not recovering very well. And so that's where my concern is. You know, the lease goes all the way up to that area where it's not. And there are some oysters there that you could scrape. And where they have the markers for the survey, there is a large area you could scrape a large amount of oysters there. My concern is that's going to create a shelf of mud that's going to then shift down and cause some massive erosion. And that does affect my property value when I start eroding, when property starts eroding into the water and my property gets smaller and smaller. And then it also, that mud gets in the water, and if the tide's coming in, it's just going to run that silt farther up the creek where we're already having massive silt problems. That's one of the major concerns. And if it comes down to it, to be profitable, I think you're going to have to put cages in this water. To be honest with you, until you get farther up on the claim, to be profitable, there's going to have to be cages to be very profitable. And that concerns navigation. And there's a lot of navigation that comes up that creek from residential areas.
Right. Thank you. So any questions, members of the commission? Mr. Zedrin has a question for you, sir.
Is this creek... Has it ever been dredged so that, you know, it is navigable, and will it be dredged?
It's not a dredged creek. I don't think it's been dredged in since I've been alive. It might have been drugged years in the past by watermen to keep it open.
Okay.
You know, when that was a practice.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, sir. Who's next, please? Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Joe Celia. I also live on the creek, albeit a bit further towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Farmer. I think the fact that so many of the residents of Haywood Creek have come here today to discuss this issue is indicative of the fact that it is truly a matter of great concern to us. You can't really tell by pictures, but Haywood Creek, it's almost like a little country road. And those of us who bought houses here over the years partially have done so because there's a certain ambiance to it. It's very quiet. From my dock to the dock across the creek from me, probably isn't more than about 75 feet. And I think there's a very significant concern on our part that this application will result in a situation that makes our property less attractive and hence less valuable. And I think I can speak for many of my neighbors and say, you know, it's probably our single biggest asset. And as a result, we take it very, very seriously. What really isn't apparent by, you know, looking at some of these maps, and I've reviewed them all, is the creek is extremely shallow, and the channels of possible navigation in and out are extremely narrow and change constantly based on where the nor'easter comes in, pushes the sand, and there are a lot of places as you come in where you really only have 10, 12, 15 feet of navigable water, and particularly at low tide. I live at the end of the creek. I have a boat lift. I can't take my boat in or out within 2.5 to 3 hours of low tide, because when it goes down, it runs into the silt. Gentleman asked the question, has it ever been dredged? I will bring flowers to your altar if you give us permission to dredge that creek. Because the particularly the end of the creek has three or four of those V-dot, you know, where they put the thing along the road that drains. The Coleman Swamp and a lot of these roads all drain at the end of this creek. And in fact, on Google Earth, if you look at some of the satellite shots, you can see the brown line of silt snaking out of some of these ditches pouring into the creek. One of my neighbors, who she recently passed, but she lived on the creek for 60 years, remembers when there was sand where her property, and she actually lives right next to where Mr. Farmer lives. The silt problem is just incredible, and one of our greatest concerns is dredging is just going to push that stuff up into the water, and the incoming tide or the wind is going to just dump all that silt all the way up and down the creek. So that's one concern. Second concern is some of you folks have articulated and questioned. While Mr. Green may have the intent of harvesting oysters with a certain methodology at this moment, there is clearly no control once he receives that lease as to the methodology he employs. So while all good intentions may exist today, that lease may be inherited by somebody else, that lease may be assigned or sold to somebody else, and we have absolutely no way of controlling whether or not cages or any kind of, you know, aquaculture take place. And I can tell you, you put oyster cages anywhere near some of the areas of this creek, it will become a navigational hazard. I've been told, but this proceeding has actually motivated me to come and work with you all locally to see if we can do something about getting some of the silt out of this creek, because I believe it's actually bad for the environment and the wildlife, because we don't have any underground vegetation, because the silt is 12 feet thick in some places. So the last thing we need is to make it worse. And lastly, as people have pointed out, a fair amount of this land adjacent to the application acres is either marsh or probably not residential property, but a fair amount of it is. And again, part of the appeal of where we live is this bucolic kind of little creek. Tons of oysters, I mean, if I were Mr. Farmer and have all these oyster ground markers all over the place, it makes your property less attractive. So, you know, sort of in summary, we, a lot of the residents of this creek, are quite concerned about this. We certainly don't want to increase our silt problem. We want to protect our property value. We want to protect the visual appeal of our property. This is the basis of our objection. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Who's next, please? Yes, ma'am. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Joyce Neville, and I'm a property owner. And it was my understanding that this water is contaminated and condemned for oyster harvest.
I think certain areas, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, that were under consideration are condemned, and they have been cut out of the application. Is that correct, sir? Yeah. So this is fine. This is okay for direct harvest.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Who's next? Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Good, sir.
Bubba Saunders. I actually own this point of land right here at this dock. And, of course, my first concern was when Mr. Green's application was put in, it was, you know, very close to my dock. And, of course, the contamination line has put that out. I'm going to take a little different spin on this as a boater. I think everybody kind of agrees that, of course, property values and whatnot. Kevin, as far as the oysters, I mean, I even have some natural oysters trying to restrike around my point. It's told to me by the previous owner that my point actually was all sandbanks at one time, and the grandkids and all could go out there and play. And I can tell you with the silt buildup, since I have owned it, which is now 10 and a half years, you better have your boots strapped on when you walk out there because you're going to lose them. As a boater, you know, I think a lot of our concerns, the ones that do actually boat and run boats out of here, there are two major points that are a navigational hazard already. And if I'm not mistaken, Joe Pollard's pier is here. There is one major point that comes out here, almost probably 5-ish to 3/4 across the creek. And then there's one actually on the inboard side of ours that comes across from the opposite side. So already we have to be quite careful to run in and out, especially at low water. There has been some talk amongst us, you know, how to approach this. We all are kind of new at this, having a lease grounds in our creek. So we're not sure of all the ins and outs and regulations of what we can do, how we can protect ourselves. And there's been some talk about whether to try to fight him and push him out of the creek completely, or we all know oysters are good. We all know it's good for our water. So we've kind of maybe taken a little bit more of a softer approach to try to work with Mr. Green. By his own accord, he's interested in this outboard lying area. He says that is the shoreline that's more conducive for what he's wanting to do. I can tell you just by kayaking the creek, these points that are a concern are somewhat a hard bottom. It is a little bit of a mix of silt there, but I think it would be hard enough to support cages. And if he comes along at some future point and puts cages on these points, then he will impede our navigational rights. And at that point, you know, I don't know how this works. You know, we're running our boat in and out, and we hit something. We have damage to our lower units. Of course, now we have an issue with our insurance companies, but yet if he has cages, you know, how does that actually go, you know, forward as far as who's responsible? Then I think we've got a problem where we have to prove that he has done something to impede our navigation. All right, so I think maybe, I can't speak for all my neighbors. My suggestion several days ago was, honestly, being a boater, once we get past Thornton Creek, which is here, we do obtain about a foot more of water depth. If you look at the actual navigational charts, once you get past Thornton Creek coming in, we're running 1 to 2 feet. I mean, typically at the end of my dock, in summertime, I may have 36 inches, maybe 32 to 36 inches up to below that. Most of us are rock fishers. You know, we up till December, January. When we get the westerly winds, which our creek does lay west to east, when we get the westerly wind, I mean, it blows our water out. When we have to time it, we have to take the boats off the lift, put them on the floater dock. When we go out, and if we come back in at low tide, it's, you know, difficult as it is to even get back in. So I think if Mr. Green would work with us, you know, I think maybe the position of most of the neighbors would be maybe to not contest this. If we could push his lease on further out to where he's beyond Thornton Creek, he's already. We all know that this whole section here is basically mud, other than these two hard bottom points that we have. Once we get past Thornton Creek, like I said, and apparently it's a greater flow of water coming through Thornton that keeps that a little bit washed out for us. And once we get past this point right here, we do pick up a little bit more depth as far as moving it out. If his true intentions are to do a natural bottom, and I don't know if that includes dredging or how he's actually going to harvest those, because we are a little concerned about dredging. But if his true intent is to stay out here on this undeveloped area, I don't understand why he's trying to take control of the whole area. You know, as a fisherman also, we are starting to get a lot of our natural grass bed back. You know, this is, of course, a favorite point of a lot of us where we're pitch baits here. And there are some grasses coming back in. It is further up in the creek now because we just got so much mud and silt in so tight. So at this point, yes. And you know, any type of disturbance of that would certainly, we wouldn't want to see that happen.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Zedrin? Sir? Sir? Mr. Zedrin's got a question.
Where would you draw the line?
Well, you know, again, just like I was saying, you know, it was kind of surprising to me 4 years ago when I discovered all this that there was a lease on this creek. I mean, I've never seen any watermen, but, of course, I live around the point. So, you know, along this line right here, I would say probably at some point, I couldn't tell you exactly where the water depth changes, but you can actually see it on your depth finder. Kevin Farmer that spoke for us, I mean, he's not a boater, so he wouldn't know these things, but a lot of us are. So, you know, as we're navigating out, once we come along this point along in here, you can actually see about another 12 inches or so, about another foot of depth come in.
Well, Mr. Zedrin, follow up.
You see where that zero is, 90?
Yes, sir.
And you see it like a right angle right there where you got it?
Yes, sir.
Would you suggest from that point across to some?
No, because that is the point that comes out. I was actually working on my boat one day, and my buddy was running it, and he found that point. And it was a very hard bottom. So, you know, I think we'd actually have to push it out a little further because you can see the way the land lays. That is, and that's a pretty wide area. It's a hard bottom point that comes out almost, not, I wouldn't say 3/4 across, but at least 50% across. And, of course, then we have the other point on the opposite side, and I couldn't tell you whether it's here or there or that whole area there swings out. So when we're moving in and out at low water, you actually kind of have to zig to the left, zig to the right to move. High water is not so much, but low water, especially in the wintertime when we have the tides flowed out, it's quite difficult to maneuver. So, you know, in my thoughts, and like I said, I can't speak for my neighbors, but to try to work with Mr. Green, I understand it's been in his family, but, you know, things do change. I mean, all these farms down here were family-owned at one time, and of course, they haven't developed, but I think to give everybody downstream where we live a little bit more peace of mind and knowing that he's willing to not impede our navigational areas. I mean, right now when you come in and out of the creek, and it wasn't like this a few years ago, we used to have maybe one or two stobs out here, and I couldn't tell you whether it's bordering this oyster lease exactly where, but we only had a few stobs now to come around to go out, because to go out, you come on around and go on out to the right. And now we have multiple stops. And, of course, some of them are the surveying stakes that were just done. But a lot of them now, you can tell they're actually marking more of these oyster beds. So we have more things we have to be careful of as we're navigating in and out.
Thank you.
I'm not sure what Mr. Green's intent is, now whether he would actually stake his off or not, but you know, I've lived on the water all my life, and, of course, I grew up on James River. I'm accustomed to oystermen being outside, you know, way offshore growing up on the James. I certainly prefer living on protected water. Never knew this was ever going to be an issue to have watermen to want to even come in and fish this, you know, area. My other concern, too, is we all know that the way that they're harvesting oysters is actually changing, too. So he's saying today that, hey, he's just going to do bottom harvesting, which I think most of us are okay with that. But we all know that they're now coming into the floats where they're using float cages and a different type of harvesting, which I'm sure would probably be more productive. And we don't, we as a community as out here, we don't have any control over him doing that in the future. But we certainly wouldn't want any type of float cages and whatnot just for the eyesore of it.
Yep. Further questions? Thanks. Oh, Heather, I'm sorry. Ms. Lusk?
Just wanted to point out that the floating cages require a totally separate permit.
Yep.
So how would we, if he already has that lease, and he comes back in here a year or two down the road, and all of a sudden he puts in for that application, how would we know that as property owners?
Mr. Stagg?
Ben, would you?
Yeah. So Ms. Lusk is right. So all he'll get, if he leases any of this, the commission approves it, he'll have the right to do bottom, and he can do cages up to 12 inches off of
it. Right.
Anything higher than that, anything in the water column, anything floating on the surface, he would have to apply for a permit. There's a public interest review. We notify anybody within 500 feet. But there'd be a newspaper ad as well.
But you say you notify the property owners through a letter?
Yes.
Okay.
So you would be notified. You would have, it's a whole separate public interest review. You'd have ability to comment on that as well. And if protested, we'd be back here again at the commission mm-hmm. for the commission to decide based on the objections.
So. Further questions?
All right. And I don't know if anybody else would want to stand up and show maybe support of working with Mr. Green. If Mr. Green is willing to reduce his area.
Let me see when we get to that point when we decide to do that.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Varnell? Well, we've heard mention of seagrass. We've heard mention of disturbance of silt. I'd like to hear Vims's just comments on what's been said.
Certainly. Eli Varnell with Vims. We don't normally really engage with the leasing program. We haven't done that a lot because we don't really need to, but in certain situations, the way it's going, there's been a lot more conversations. Siltation and seagrass restoration is natural, is kind of oxymoronic in a way, but glad that that's happening. These small tributaries, correct, are very silty. The only thing I think we would offer from a perspective of this is an overall thing that we've discussed within VIMS ourselves recently is the value of shale and on bottom. And I know preach at the choir in a lot of cases here, but shale's very limiting factor, and we would encourage a part of your decision making to be the bottom characteristics. Would that be a waste of shale? Is it too deep? Is it too silty? And we know that the growers, of course, would not do that because that's a waste of their time and money too. But that's one thing in these areas that we see could be problematic for on bottom or anything with a very silty part. We, of course, are only on the environmental and the aquaculture side. We don't deal with the property in this situation.
The question I've got is the gentleman brought up the possibility of increased siltation based on harvest. What's your position as far as that? I mean, go ahead.
Certainly. That greatly depends on the character of the bottom, how silty or sandy it is. In these areas, it does change, and it can change in one spot. Harvesting, placing of shale, that's an episodic event. It's not a daily event.
Right.
It's just like a weather condition. It will reconstitute the sediment. It just like a natural event can. I cannot tell you because of the nonlinearity of these types of systems that all the disturbance, all the resuspension that will occur from aquaculture activity, from on bottom culture. I cannot say that all that silt will go upstream.
Okay.
Because a lot of it is moving downstream also certain events. So I apologize for not being very clear, but it's
I didn't mean to put you on
very
site
specific it can be a complex situation for the geologist.
Any questions of Mr. Varnell? Well, thank you, sir. Always good to have you all here. Mr. Green, you have 5 minutes to rebut. Do you have anything else you want to say? Yes, sir. Or 3 minutes, if you'd like.
Right along here, in this area. I'm not going to say exactly where. There are two major rocks as already oysters grown. I don't want to cut off my ground. There's already rocks there. I can get the oysters up, reseed on the rocks. I don't want to cut my ground off.
Okay.
As far as the cages, I believe this young lady here pointed out the fact that if I ever opted for cages and got approved of it, if it was a problem, I have to move them as per y'all's jurisdiction. That is a point that was made earlier. I really don't want to cut any more off. I agreed right out of the gate. I said, yes, sir, Mr. Stegg, let's cut the condemned off so it's not a drama issue. This was before when condemns could be awarded.
Yep.
I've already agreed to cut some off. This was once all harvested. at one time. The watermen are like, you know, some of them dying off. There's no means.
And your plan is to put, if you get this ground, spat on shell or shell, and harvest it and work it the traditional manner without cages and without applying for floats. That's what your intent is. Any questions of Mr. Green? Ms. Lusk?
I'm sorry, so there are already oyster rocks, productive oyster rocks,
yes,
within this lease?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely. My father worked them. He actually drew a map and described them to me before he passed. He wanted me to know because he thought I was going to get this. He's kind of up here now, but yes.
Thank you.
There are two major ones in the area that Mr. Saunders opts that I should cut off. And also, some of this creates a buffer. It creates a buffer where I can't get on or come after what I've got going on, my oyster beds, so to speak. This creates a major buffer.
Questions of Mr. Green? Thank you, Mr. Green. Matters before the commission for... Ben, did you have any further? The matters before the commission for discussion... Yes, ma'am. Ma'am, we ask if you had anybody in opposition or her.
I have a question because of the conversation.
Acceptable? You can ask staff the question. What's the question?
I happen to live within the proposed place. I live on the end dock. And my question is because there's a lot of natural resources finally coming in, and we try to preserve that end for, because we're sort of at the point where we can, the boat traffic, we get a lot of wash. And
ma'am, what's the question?
Can he come up and take my oysters off of my area? Even though I see where your red line is.
Ben, can you address the issue on leasing and what occurs after leasing as briefly and as quickly as you can?
So if it's a sign, as shown, it can go any closer to you than this, where this red line.
Okay, so we can't come up to my oysters that live along here?
No. Now, probably sure. You're talking, they may be some subtitles, but I'm guessing a lot of them might be intertitles,
yes.
So they're out of the water.
So.
Yes.
That's
your private property.
Okay.
He comes up there, it's trespassing.
Okay. Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Ms. Lusk.
After hearing from everyone and reviewing staff's recommendation, I see that staff recommends that we approve this. The area has natural oyster rocks that are historically there. It's an area that's historically been worked by the applicant's family, but in general, it's an area that has been worked by watermen for quite some time, it seems. And also, you know, the lower part of this waterway is already impeded, but the presence of additional oysters may help with that. I'm ready to make a motion to approve staff recommendation.
Is that your motion?
Yes, it is.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Minor. Further discussion? Mr. Tankard?
I will agree with the motion for sure. I'm just, you know, we run into the fact that people believe that cages are the future on all these leases. It seems to be a pretty consistent theme. I don't see any impediment to navigation with on-bottom shelling or spat-on shell. So I'm afraid that there's a misperception about what can happen here, and that's perhaps why the protestants are here.
Well, further comments? You know, I'm convinced, you know, we have to take someone to come in here under oath, and obviously they can change, but when they tell you they're going to do something, unless you know otherwise or have reason to believe otherwise, you should take them at face value. I'm swayed at this point by his repeated assertion that he's going to use the traditional on-bottom. I hope he maintains that. And I concur with you, Mr. Tankard. I don't see at this juncture how that's going to be a problem. If the cages do come into play, the Marine Police can go and take care of that. And since we've already been notified, it'll be duly noted in the record that there's been concern about cages here and hazard to navigation. If that should come up, which I hope it doesn't, then we will handle it. So anyway. No, sir. Not at this point. Nope. Sorry. As a point of order, the Public hearing is over, but in all due respect, sir. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you for your presentation.